The light of the world, the Gospel of John. Boy, that's an amazing book to read. If you ever heard Darrell Johnson talk about the Gospel of John, he says that is the most beautiful book ever written. Ever written. The most beautiful book ever written. And what can we say about the Gospel of John? First is the Gospel of Signs. So in other Gospels, we call Jesus' mighty deeds miracles. And in this Gospel, they're called signs, okay? Because they try to communicate something bigger than just the miracle, something deeper. We will see that today. Another important thing in the Gospel of John is the symbolic language. And I have a picture there of bread. And remember what Jesus says in the Gospel of John. Do you remember? I'm the bread of life. Symbolic language, light, darkness, water, life, bread. And a third thing, which is very important in the Gospel of John, is that it's full of Jewish cultic language, full of Jewish cultic symbolism. There's a lot of talk about the temple, the feasts, the Sabbath, and Jesus is moving around all those feasts and celebration to bring a new meaning. So when we open this service, we read from the first chapter on the Gospel of John. So the first chapter in the Gospel of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, introduces the crucial theological themes and symbols using the Gospel. So you want to know what the Gospel is about, you really need to read very well the chapter 1, especially verse 1 to 18. Okay, very important. And in the ancient world, I'm not that old. They didn't have a preface, how you say it in English? Preface? Boy. They didn't have index, so you can see the table of contents. So what did they do? The first chapter of the book was important. Because in the first chapter of the book in the ancient world, since they didn't have preface, right? Index, in the first chapter, an author will lay the main themes of his book, on the Gospel. So in this case, that's what John is doing, okay? And another very crucial thing. This is very important to get if you read the Gospel of John. Because during this season, we will talk about particular symbols in the Gospel of John. Today will be light, next week will be life. And Martin will tell you the other two because I forgot them. What's a symbol? A symbol is an image, an action, or a person that is understood to have a transcendent significance. I am the light of the world. What does that mean? Jesus is a candle? No. There is a transcendent significance in what he's saying. So in Johannine terms, symbols serve as a bridge for the separation between what is from above and what is from below, without collapsing the distinction. So the symbolic language is helping us to grasp the meaning of the Gospel to our lives. And crucial symbols in the Gospel of John are the religious symbols in the Jewish culture. Very important. And there is a section in here, very crucial section in the Gospel of John, from chapter 5 to chapter 10. In chapter 5 to 10, John presents a series of Jewish feasts. The Sabbath, John 5. The Passover, John 6. The Tabernacles, John 7 to 10. The Feast of the Dedication, John 10. In this section, What John is telling us is that all of them, all of these feasts, now are reinterpreted in light of Jesus. Jesus gives the true meaning to the Sabbath, to the Passover. It's in the midst of this feast when he says, hey, you celebrate the Passover, right? When you got manna from heaven. I'm the true bread of life. Your parents ate, your ancestor ate that manna and died. Whoever eats this bread of life will live forever. He's using that symbolism. So it's very important to grasp the context, the cultural context, the religious context when Jesus is saying these kind of things. So that will get you a deeper meaning about what Jesus is saying. So today we talk about a very special symbol. So when we go around in the van with the kids, Noelia loves Christmas. She loves the lights. So when we go around and there is a house, he's like, hey, mom, dad, light, light. Then we go around to other places and she's like, light, light, light. So now it's like every 2 seconds. She's like, lights, 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 lights everywhere. So lights is a very important symbol as well in the gospel. So we're talking today about light. Light. So we're going to talk about a little bit about the Feast of the Tabernacles. The Feast of the Tabernacles. So imagine being in Jerusalem during the most wonderful time of the year, the happiest season of all. For us, it would be Christmas. For them, was the month called Tishri. Huh? You like that? I just came back from Israel. I'm speaking Hebrew. Tishri, which would be kind of mid-September, mid-October for us. The month began with the Jewish New Year. Then a few days later, you had the Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the day of celebration of redemption, when the people of God remembered God's redemption and dreamed of a day when everything would be put to right and their people would be redeemed forever. 5 days after the Yom Kippur was the most wonderful festival that lasted for 7 days. Some people say 8 days, but okay, let's go with seven because it's a good number. Seven. 7 days. The Festival of the Tabernacles, when Jerusalem burst with thousands and thousands of pilgrims sitting in a booth like small tents all over the city. And you understand when I say booth? Like small tents with trees, pieces of trees, and they're still doing that. We lived in Montreal, and in West Montreal, and it was interesting to see in Christmas, it was like, where are the decorations? No, nobody's, and we were living in a Jewish neighborhood. I didn't know. So they put, they still celebrate the Feast of the Tabernacle, and they put the little houses, and they put lights, and they eat, and they feast for a week inside those little booths. So this was a very popular feast, full of joy. The Feast of the Tabernacle came after the fruit harvest. And the fruit harvest. So now all the grain and all the fruit was stored for the winter for months ahead. We lost, we don't have that kind of thing in here, right? Because we go to the supermarket and we get food whenever we want. We get tomatoes all year, blueberries, and all those kind of things. But for them, harvest was a time of joy, because it was a special time. Can we possibly imagine how important or how joyful it was when the storehouses were full once again of food ready for the long winter ahead? But the Festival of the Tabernacle was not merely celebrating a good harvest. It was one of the three festivals appointed by God for his people to observe. As in Deuteronomy, it says, three times a year, all your men must appear before the Lord, for the Lord your God, at the place he will choose, at the festival of the unleavened bread, the festival of the weeks, and the festival of the tabernacles. No one should appear before the Lord empty-handed. Each of you must bring a gift in proportion to the way the Lord your God has blessed you. The Feast of the Tabernacle is also known as the ingathering, corresponding to the second harvest. And it was the conclusion of another harvest, reminding the people how blessed they were by God. So you could hear the people rejoicing all week long. Blessed are you, Yahweh, or God, who sanctify us with your provision, they will sing. And there were two ceremonies, very special ceremonies. And there are two symbols in here, very important. Feast of the Tabernacle, first ceremony, the water ceremony. The water ceremony. Every day during the feast, a priest would go to the pool of Siloam with a golden pitcher and draw some water, which was then poured into a bowl at the altar of the temple in Jerusalem to remind people of Exodus 17 when God provided water in the desert. Remember that? Water from the rock. The water ceremony celebrating God's provision of water at Horeb in the past. In many Old Testament texts, this is remembered. Isaiah 44, for I will pour water on the thirsty land and streams on the dry ground. I will pour out my spirit on your offspring and my blessing on your descendants. So water then later meant not only water, meant the gift of the spirit. And in this, in the middle of this, when they're carrying the water and they're doing all the ceremony when the water, when Jesus, on the last and the greatest day, and the last day was special because they did this once every day, this carrying of water. But in the last day, they did it seven times. So on the last day of the greatest day of the festival of the tabernacles, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, let anyone who's thirsty come to me and drink. So having the context is crucial to grasp the significance of that saying. When they're all doing all that celebration with water and all that, hey, I got that water you're looking for. I got that. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture said, rivers of living water will flow from within them. And then later John will say he was talking about the Spirit. Let anyone who is thirsty come to me. The invitation. Remember that. Jesus' invitation. Come to me and drink. You are waiting for that future. You are waiting for that fulfillment. You have the hope that in the future God will come and give you that water, that spirit. Come to me. Now. Come to me. Come to me and drink. If you believe in me, rivers of living water will flow within you. The second ceremony was the ceremony of the light. And this is my favorite one. So they put those big, big lamps. I don't have a pointer, so there. I did a little down. Yeah? There, so those lamps were 22 meters high. So 22 meters would be like a lot, okay? Very high. And then at night, in the darkest moment of the night, a priest would go in that ladder. Do you see the ladder? Do you see it or not? Yeah, you see the ladder. Thank you. So, and he will turn on those lights, like David's here. And those lights will lighten, they say in some writing, the entire city. From wherever you were, you could see those lights. Beautiful. Beautiful. So every night in the court of the women in the temple, four great candelabra were set up, each with huge golden bowls on top, as you can see in there. Every night, four temple priests would go on these bowls and utter in the utter darkness and light them. It is said that it was so bright that you could see the light from everywhere in Jerusalem. This ceremony was to remember the pillar of fire that guided God's people in the desert. So all this celebration, I'm going to use a weird word, are eschatological in some sense. Eschatology is a weird word, right? Sounds like a medical term. I have my itchy arm. I have an eschatology here. Can you give me some cream? So it's kind of a weird word. But eschatology means, it comes from the Greek word eschaton, and it means the end. So these feasts are like the light, are like looking at the past. God guide us in the desert. He gave us his light. He provided for us in the desert. But also is looking at the future. Someday, we will be redeemed. We will be free from all of this, from the Romans, from any kind of oppression. And we'll have the eternal life forever. So looking for the end, for that eschatological fulfillment. That's the meaning of that. And there are some biblical texts that talk about that. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? A promise in Isaiah. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you. Remember the opening of John. Your light has come, the glory of the Lord rises upon you, and the light came, and the glory of the Lord dwelt among us. We saw his glory. John is taking all this symbolism and applying it to Jesus. And my favorite one, the sun will no more be your light by day, nor will the brightness of the moon shine on you, for the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your God will be your glory. So this text, Isaiah, so important, so important. We were at Qumran. Oh, that was one of my favorite places in Israel, in the world, actually. We were in Qumran, and they found these amazing manuscripts. They're like 2,000 years old. You know the prophet, the most important prophet, they found many copies? Isaiah. And I got to see the Isaiah scroll in the Israel Museum. And that was so funny. I was like, look! The Isaiah scroll, looking at the people, and Nicola was like, this is like early Christmas for Daniel. So Isaiah was so important for them. They knew this text. They knew them by heart. They had this hope for the future. And then Jesus turns up and he says, I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. They know their Isaiah very well. Oh, I got very emotional here. I deleted like. They go this text. They know this text very well. The Lord will be your everlasting light. And then this Jesus turns around. He shows up and says, I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. So what's going on? For John's gospel, the great cultic tradition and meaning of Israel temple are all, everything fulfilled in Jesus. So Jesus is showing up and he's basically saying, this is it. This is the moment that you're waiting, that you've been waiting for. This is what you're hoping for. This is it. It's now. It's happening now. What your ancestors were looking for, the hope that they cried for. This is it. Now, come to me. I will give you that water that lasts forever. I will give you the light that will shine forever. This is it. But you know what happens. You know what happens. And Jesus confirms he's the light of the world. Because in chapter 9, he opens the eyes of a blind man that has been blind since the day he was born. And this is another, there's so much in John. It's not fair I have 20 minutes. Let's do until noon, okay? So this is another beautiful thing in John. So Jesus says, I am the bread of life. And then he multiplied the bread. Jesus says, I am the life, I'm the resurrection, and he raises Lazarus. Jesus says, I am the light of the world, and open the eyes of the blind. So every saying, every discourse, every sermon is followed by a sign, by a demonstration of reality. Boy, I wish all politicians were like that, right? Every promise is followed by a sign and something. Okay, let's not go there. But what happened? Jesus faces rejection. Look at those faces. They're so mad at Jesus. Look at them. Boy. The irony. John Pryor says this. He wrote a book in which he deals with all the Old Testament imagery in the Gospel of John. And he says this. He says the irony in chapters 2 to 12 is that Jesus is demonstrating to be the fulfillment of all that Judaism stands for and points toward. He is demonstrating to be that one thing that they are looking for. It's eschatological fulfillment. But Judaism and his leaders are willfully blind. Jesus is rejected. And there is a long discussion if you read, and I invite you through this Advent season, read the Gospel of John. There's a long discussion in those chapters, in the Feast of the Tabernacle. Who's Jesus? Who is this guy? Is he the Messiah? He cannot be the Messiah because he's from Galilee. Is he the prophet? Oh, he is the Messiah. Maybe he is. No. The Pharisees challenge him. Here you are appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid. And then later they ask, who are you? Who are you? And then we are reminded in the prologue again. We go back. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world and through the... And though the world was made through him, but the world did not recognize him. The world did not recognize him. And they failed to reject that invitation. And in the opening, this is a very beautiful story. In the opening, after that opening we read in the opening of our service, we got this story. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. This is John the Baptist. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" And they said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And Jesus replied, "Come and you will see." Regretfully, there is something in the language there that is missing translation. When they ask, "Where are you staying?" they're using a Greek word. It's the Greek word menon, where they're actually saying, it would be, I would think, more accurate to say, "Where do you remain?" Does that sound familiar for you? John 15, "Remain in me, as I remain in the Father." So they ask him, "Where do you remain? Where do you remain?" So they are asking, what is this is about? Are you the Messiah? Are you the one? Where do you remain? Where? And the invitation from Jesus is, "Come, come, and you will see. Come. Let anyone who's thirsty come to me. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness. Come and see." Where do you remain? Are you the light of the world? Is this true? Is this message true? Will I have true light for my life to face the challenges, the depression, the anxiety, and all of that we have in our world, and worse stuff? Are you truly the light of the world? And Jesus is saying, "Come, come." They rejected the light. They rejected the invitation. Let's not do that. Jesus asks us today, come. Come and see. And seeing in the gospel, boy, there's so much in that, means a deeper understanding of faith. Come and see. We're going to have communion where it's filled. Let's fill. So team word today, filled with the communion. So have this in your heart. Jesus' hand is extended to you today in this Christmas season. Come and see. I am everything you need, everything you are looking for is me. Come, come and see.
It's been a few years now. Am I on here?
Yes.
Polly, my wife, was in the bank some years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now, and something was in the news, some terrible darkness, I can't even remember what it was, but we can pretty well tune into the news any week, and there are hard things, darkness in the world. And she was having a conversation with the teller. And the teller then said, "Wait a minute, it's Christmas time. We shouldn't be talking about this darkness." And Polly's pretty wise, and she said, "No, actually, that's why Christ came. Christ came to bring light to the world. He came to restore a broken world." And that's what we celebrate here, because all have sinned, not just the ones we read about in the news, but all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But God demonstrated his love to us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. This is a tangible reminder of the heart of the gospel, We celebrate the baby in the cradle at this time of year. But Jesus himself said in the Garden of Gethsemane at the other end of his life, it's for this reason that I came,